Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world. It's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy.
Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh, now, here's Jim Coyle.
Welcome aboard. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, and man, oh man, do we have a show today, and get it started off with Hall of Famer Angel Escobedo after a gigantic weekend for Indiana football. And I was talking to Angel in the break there, and you were talking about your, first of all, thank you for joining us, and congratulations on entering the IU Athletics Hall of Fame, which we will cover in depthly. But I was amazed that the first thing Angel wants to talk about was not him, was not his team, was, well, kind of a little bit about his team, but a little bit. His team was involved in the game, all jacked up, and Saturday night on TV, and you weren't there, but apparently your players were all there having a blast.
Yeah, they're having a great time. I had told you, halftime I was home watching the TV, watching the game, and they just kept showing a snapshot of my guys, shirts off, screaming, all wet, you know, getting the crowd going. It was great. It was great. It was fun to see us kick Illinois' butt like that.
Yeah, but butt kicking is certainly very, very appropriate, and we'll get to that as Don Fisher joins us today, Greg Straw, and Dustin Epirik as well. But wanted to get to Angel in before he takes off and has to working hard. Just mentioned he only got to see half of the game because he had to take off on a recruiting trip. Such is the life of a college coach or a coach, period. But Angel is one of the most recent inductions into the IU Athletics Hall of Fame, and I was fortunate enough to be there for that, and you could not have a more deserving person. Former national champion as a competitor, top five in the world as a competitor, and, man, he's got to be number one in coaching because you've taken an IU program that was an afterthought and turned it in to a Big Ten competitor, which the Big Ten is the conference when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it is. The Big Ten's won the last 14 NCAA titles for wrestling. Penn State winning, I think, 12 of those. It's the premier conference. It is the top of the top. It's the best wrestling in all of college. And so it's fun. It's been fun to, it's been fun and hard. It was a hard rebuild. I thought I could do it in a year. It took me longer than a year. But we got things going. We've had two back-to-back top 15 recruiting classes. We've been in the top 25 the last 3 years. So now it's just time to keep climbing the ranks of the Big Ten.
A lot of times we see coaches that come back that were great athletes, that were stars at their schools, but it just doesn't always work from a coaching standpoint.
Right.
But this one more than has, because Indiana was, I want to say dormant maybe, but it's hard not to be when you're competing with the Yankees every year and with all of those teams every year. And that's what was going on. But you had been able to do that. And man, that starts at the bottom from recruiting, and I can only imagine how hard it is to recruit that type of talent to a program that has not been competitive with those guys, but you've been able to do that. And the coaching obviously doesn't hurt.
Yeah, the coaching doesn't. No, I have a great staff. They do a great job. They're on the road a lot. They build relationships with the right kids. And, kind of what Sig's doing over there in football, you identify – what type of recruits fit at Indiana Wrestling. And you go after those kids and you're not trying to battle the blue chippers. You're getting the diamonds in the rough and the guys that want to compete really hard and work in our system. And we've been able to do that. And those kids really come here and they really progress. And we're all about development here. So it's about developing these guys into premier athletes in the Big Ten, and that's kind of what we hit home on.
And people hear and say the right fit and things like that all the time, but that could not be truer, because from what you have accomplished, and you just mentioned Sig, and that is true. He had a bunch of guys that were came over from James Madison in addition to other schools, and everybody was like, well, how are they going to compete in the Big Ten? Well, I think we're getting a pretty good indication on both that and wrestling how that will work.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to get buy-in, right? You get the buy-in, you get the kids that believe, and you want to get kids that have a chip on their shoulder, because those are the special kids that they don't care. They don't care, hey, I'm not in a blue blood program right now, but I'm going to make it into one. And they have that edge, and that's the type of edge we're looking for. They're not scared. We always say never daunted. Like, those are the kids you need to get that aren't daunted. They go out there, they compete at a high level. Doesn't matter if it's a top 10 opponent, they're going to try and dominate. And it's fun, because once you get those kids, they're always trying to get better.
It obviously so. And it has worked. When you took over the program that was not exactly lighting the world on fire. Yeah. What's your thought going into that? Okay, how am I going to do this? What in the world am I going to do? What can I change? Because you hadn't been a college coach before,
no,
right?
No, yeah. That's what a lot of people
That's another thing. I'm like, how do you go from not doing it and doing it at such a high level?
Yeah, that's a lot of people don't realize this was my first head coaching gig. So, I mean, I'm coming in here brand new, best conference in the country with no blueprint. So it took me a while, and, you know, I thought it was going to take me a lot quicker, but me, you know, I just didn't know, you know, what you don't know, you don't know. And so it's like, I had to create a system, a blueprint of how we were going to win here, how we were going to ignite the program. And that took some time, but, you know, I think we got it down pat. I think we have a blueprint where every year looks the same of our development, the type of kids we want. You know, our coaching staff has been together for a while, so I think we got it rolling now. But that process was long for me, because I wanted it to be 2 years. You know, it took about five. And when I took over the program at NCAAs, we took 63rd the year prior when I took over. So, I mean, we were at the bottom of not even the Big Ten, but the whole conference. And so we had to do a lot of moving up in order for us to, you know, get to where I want us to get to. And we still got a lot more room to grow, but that's the fun part.
But how did you manage and create that template when you're at ground zero with no experience on how to do it, how to coach, all of that, other than the moxie that you brought within?
Like, yeah, you just grab a bunch of spaghetti and you just throw it at the wall and see what sticks. It's kind of like that.
Well, you must have had a lot that stuck, man. And then obviously the bigger thing is to get these guys to follow you. And they obviously have. And that first of all, you have to take a lot of personal pride in that, because to get such a group, especially wrestlers. I wrestled 1 year. In my life, and 1 year, and I keep saying that 1 year, because it is difficult. And I knew that I had come into it too late, and I'm like, oh hell no, these guys are so far ahead of me, and I can't stand not to be competitive in something. And I'm like, oh hell no, they're going to kick my butt all over the place from now on. But it is one of the toughest, if not the toughest, individual sports there are, and I can say that because of that 1 year.
That's one thing.
I learned, and buddy, a lot of these guys do this from third grade, fourth grade, and that's the guys I was going against, and I'm like, but it's ingrained in them, and they're different. They're different athletes. It's like I competed in pro rodeo for a long time. And one thing I love about rodeo athletes is there was no quit. There was no stop. You don't get paid if you don't win. Yeah. And that was that simple. And it's the same thing with wrestling. You don't win if you don't win. And it was just like, there's no second place to them.
No, though there's no, you know, like it's a sport where there's not a lot of glory. There's not a lot of, you know, you're not going to get paid millions of dollars. You're not going to do these things like the NIL and all those. It's really for personal gain, your personal growth. And that's why it takes a different type of athlete. I mean, I put it this way. Think about, you know, you being hungry, thirsty for a couple days a week, and then having to go compete when someone's trying to kill you. You know, it's like, man, you gotta be kind of different, be able to go out there and do that, because that's exactly what wrestling is. You got to make weight, you know, so you're depriving your body. And then you go out there and then you got another guy that is literally trying to whip your ass out there. And you're like, man, I'm hungry and I'm thirsty, but I got to fight this guy. And so it takes a special person to persevere through that, because there are no excuses. You know, if you're not ready, if your mind's not ready, then that guy's going to go out there and he's going to just kick your butt in front of thousands of people. So it's really about, you know, dedication, preparation, and, you know, having mental toughness that is just, it's incredible. Those guys don't quit. There's no quit in wrestlers, which is awesome.
Absolutely. There is. And especially, I can't even only imagine at the collegiate level, because at that time, you're pretty strong. You're probably as strong as you're going to be. You can maintain that strength probably, but this is, you're at an age 19, 20, 21.
Oh yeah.
Your body is where it's going to be. And man,
it's crazy. And you know, there's a stat, a lot of people don't know, but you know, wrestling is, the hardest Division I sport to earn a scholarship in. So when you put that into consideration, and then you put into the degree of athlete that you have, and especially in the Big Ten, you're talking about like specimens, right? The best of the best. That's why a lot of these guys go over to MMA. They're winning at a high level at UFC just because they're built from a different cloth. It's like you're getting the premier athlete, not only physically, but mentally. And you combine those two, those guys do whatever they want, right? They go out and be very successful.
Angel, I want to definitely get you on again sometime, but I wanted to congratulate you. I you're one of the people I've known you, I think, since you took over.
Yes, since I took over, yeah.
It was just a great, and I've just enjoyed our relationship ever since, for and sure. Just have That's nothing great. But admiration for you, brother.
Thank you.
We'll have to do this again. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys. Have a good
Angel
one.
Angel Escobedo, Indiana's Hall of Fame wrestling coach, joins us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We'll have him back on when the season gets going, as a matter of fact. Thank you, Angel. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Hey, we've got more coming up. The Fish joins us next, right after these messages from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're back with more on the other side. Man. Hey, welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. No better way to start it off than with the Fish, and I am quite certain you had a fun weekend. I can only imagine, man, you must have had to do the honey and the tea thing after that game with all the scoring going on, as Indiana puts on an absolute whipping of Illinois. Wow. Ironically, Don, somebody before the game, somebody said, well, I hope it's like the last year's Nebraska game. I'm like, easy there. I don't know about something like that, but damn, it wasn't. It was worse. Who would have thought that?
Well, it was a special day for Indiana football, no question about it. When you've got a national audience watching on NBC and you've got everybody in the country picking Illinois to beat Indiana because they were ranked ninth or eighth, whatever the case was, going into the contest. But all you had to do was listen to the first 20 minutes of our pregame. And Buck Sewer came on the air. We had to fill 20 minutes of time because the game wasn't going to start until 7:50. It was supposed to start at 7:45 kick time, but they moved it 5 minutes. So we had an extra long pregame. And so for the first 20 minutes of our broadcast, Buck Sewer took apart Illinois, basically saying, I've looked at this team now for the last week. I've looked at the Duke film a couple of times because that was the toughest team that they played. And he said, I'm sorry, but I can't find anything that they're better than Indiana at. And I mean, he walked through the offensive line, as big as they are and all that kind of thing. He just didn't see it. He looked at the quarterback matchup. He just didn't see it. He looked at the defensive play. He just didn't see it. And he said, I'm trying my hardest to find something that Illinois is better than Indiana at, and I don't see it. And he literally came out and dissected the whole Illinois team in regard to what it looked like compared to Indiana and said that on the air. And it played out absolutely the way he said it was going to play out. And it was 63-10 whipping of the Fighting Illini. And they didn't have any answers for Indiana. And that was just special. It really was.
Yeah, I agree. As a matter of fact, I agree exactly with what Coach Buck said, because before I was talking to some folks and I said, look, I have no even concerns. Indiana's going to win the game by double digits. Now, I didn't expect there to be that many double digits, but I said the exact thing, same thing. I said, they're better at Illinois at every position, at every single position. They're better. Illinois' offensive line, although they have the most starts in college football, we saw what happened to Duke. They gave up sacks left and right. They were only in that game and won that game because of Duke couldn't hold on to the ball. But, and the receivers, get out of here. They've got one of the best – IU has one of the best receiving corps in the country. Defensively, I don't want to say concern was question mark was the defensive line. I didn't know how well they had really replaced what they had last year. And, damn, it looked like the L.A. Rams out there. Just causing unbelievable heck, just chaos.
Well, Buck also pointed out that Indiana in the first few ball games, if there was going to be a question mark on IU, it would be in the pressure that they could put on the quarterback, Lute Altmyer. And that was answered without question. And here's the other thing. They allowed 2 yards rushing in this football game. Indiana put up 312. That is the fourth straight game in which they've had 300-plus yards in a contest rushing the football. From a passing standpoint, I don't know what you can say about Fernando Mendoza that isn't being said by everybody, that this guy looks like the real deal in the sense of how much he's improved from game one to game four. In the last 2 weeks now, he has thrown 40 completions in 43 attempts.
Yeah,
has 10 touchdown throws in those two games and 537 yards of passing offense. It's just remarkable.
And no interceptions.
And it's remarkable what he's been able to do. And the improvement you could see from game to game, just how much more comfortable he is than he was in the very first game of the season. So we're looking at a football team right now that you can obviously say is one of the best teams in the country, but they still haven't played the big boys, the biggest boys. Well, they played a pretty big team in Illinois, but my point is there's a long way to go. And absolutely, despite the fact that they won this ball game going away and dominated them in every way, you still have to be, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. You can't count on this to happen every week, and it's probably not going to. And the next test is one I think that will tell us that, because I think the Iowa football team, first of all, they are coached by Kirk Ferentz, who I think is one of the best coaches in the country. I've always thought that about him because he has a formula just like Indiana has a formula. And he coaches to that formula. And they've always, the one thing I think that they've improved on is their quarterback. The thing that Iowa has struggled with in recent years is they haven't had the most dynamic quarterbacks out there. But the Gronkowski kid, to me, looks like he is exactly what they needed to upgrade the offense for the Hawkeyes. And thus far, I would say that looks good. But I'm not saying that they aren't that they're world beaters. I don't want to say that, but they've got a lot of tools out there. And the other thing about them is they're extremely well coached. So this will be a challenge, especially at Iowa.
It has always been a very, very tough place to play because the one thing Iowa usually has is a tough defense. And it's a great place to play because their fans are fantastic football right. fans, and they appreciate great football. And I agree with you. Kirk Ferentz has been around for a long time, winning his coach in Big Ten history now, right. passing Woody Hayes.
Correct.
But this Indiana team, I've said before the season that they were going to be a better team, and man, they not only are they, but they are showing it so much earlier. I was just super impressed with everything but the defensive line and what they did. They did not give Luke Altmyer time to breathe, sacked him 7 times, and he did not have room to throw. The secondary also, there were a lot of coverage. Some of those sacks were mm-hmm. coverage sacks.
They were.
Because right. he had nobody to throw to. And, I mean, Indiana's defense, Brian Haynes and every one of his assistants, just a remarkable job in preparing for that game and shutting down what was one of the higher-rated and thought-of offenses and quarterbacks in the country. I found it ironic that Fernando Mendoza was not getting any love nationally, like Indiana was not. They were not getting love nationally. And I'm like, all right, guys. I said, I'm telling you, I told you last year. And boom. Well, now I think he's probably third highest from Vegas on winning the Heisman.
Well, we also got talk last year about Curtis winning the Heisman too. And you know, the only way you win the Heisman is you've got to maintain essentially what Fernando has done all the way through the season.
So, yeah, you have to do that against Penn State and against Oregon. Exactly.
You're going to have the tests are coming. Let's face it, they are coming. But what I've seen thus far tells me that Indiana is capable of competing against anybody that they play. And this next week will be another one of those matchups that most people are going to say this is kind of a toss-up type game. But based on what Indiana's done here in the first 4 games, I feel pretty good about what we're going to see.
Oh, absolutely. And Iowa has struggled with offensively. They brought in a quarterback from South Dakota State who I was like, oh, okay, that's going to be challenging because Iowa's never had a guy that can throw the ball like this. But they haven't been throwing the ball. So we'll see how that works out. But sure. Indiana's defense has just played extraordinarily well. The offense, they're scary. I mean, scary. You mentioned the running game again. For the 4th straight time, they go over 300 yards, and that's after losing one of their top running backs. So this offense, the only thing I don't understand is, again, I look at the AP top 10, and I know people that's irrelevant at the moment, but Texas, get the hell Texas out of here. I'm tired of – it's just all hype, all Arch Manning hype. And I see teams for how they are, and I understand you've got to – now they're going to say, well, it'll come down to the Oregon game. But Indiana has put themselves in the conversation with the national pundits as far as being a CFP team and this not being a flash in the sure. pan of yeah. last year. So there's no way you can ignore what they're doing. But it also puts a bigger target on your back, Don.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you think Indiana Stadium was electric on Saturday, you wait to get to Iowa City because it's going to be electric there too. Their fan base shows up. They are a tremendous fan base for their Hawkeyes. Indiana hasn't won there since 2012. That's the last time Indiana won in Iowa. Now, they haven't played a lot over the last 10 years. They've only played Iowa 3 times. But all 3 of those games were wins for the Hawkeyes and pretty dominant wins for the most part. These two teams don't mirror each other because Iowa is a ball club that generally runs the football really well. They don't throw it as much as most teams do. Kirk Ferentz is, as I said before, one of the best coaches in the country. His record indicates that. I've always liked what I've seen from the Hawkeyes in the sense of how they go about their business defensively, because they are always a really good defensive football team. And they have one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. So when I look at the Hawkeyes, this is a challenge to me. Indiana's record against Iowa over the years is 46 losses and 28 wins and four ties. Iowa beat Indiana the last time they played 34-6. The Hawkeyes have had Indiana's number. But this is a different world we live in with Kurt Cignetti here at IU now. And he has proven to people that you do not take him lightly. And if you do, you're going to get killed. And there's no question. I just think this is going to be a really good football game. I can't wait to see how Indiana handles this. Because every one of these games, Jim, is a challenge. Whether you like it or not, every game is a challenge. And every game is
a challenge too.
Yeah. And it's a proving ground for your football team. And so you really want to know where you're at, especially at this time of the year. You've only played really two teams now that gave you a little bit of trouble. And this team that we just played didn't give us any trouble. So
just have to be ranked ninth in the country as well.
Yeah.
Hey, before you get out of here, because I know you got to go, but I want to mention Don's son is the head coach at Edgewood High School, just outside of Bloomington here. And they are 5-0, baby. 5-0, Don. Thank you, Rufo Jones.
Well,
that's got to be something pretty cool.
We're really proud of what Scott's been able to do this year. Obviously, this is his third season there. He had to rebuild the program at Edgewood, and he's done a remarkable job in that regard in finally their winning, which they had not done the first 2 years he was there or the previous 4 or 5 years prior to that. But he's got them rolling a little bit. They played a pretty easy schedule, much like Indiana has. But they've got two shutouts in there. They put points on the scoreboard. I think his defense is really, really good this year, much better than it has been. And we're just proud of what he's been able to accomplish. But their toughest part of their season, just like for Indiana, it's the toughest parts coming up. So we'll see how they continue to fare.
Well, it looks good, and we will see you on Thursday night at Hoosier Hanks East as it returns to Thursday with Inside Indiana Football Coach Cignetti. So I'm sure that the crowd will continue to rise, although it's been pretty full. But, man, after this week, it may be a capacity only.
And let's hope that we get a few more people showing up for the talk show at Hoosier Hanks. See ya.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Don Fisher, the voice of the Hoosiers, joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. And, man, what a way to start it off. Couple of Hall of Famers already. Angel Escobedo, Indiana's wrestling coach, which we'll get him back on when we can have him on a little longer. And Don Fisher, make sure you go out to Hoosier Hanks East over on College Mall Road for Inside Indiana Football. That's on Thursday when Coach Cignetti will be out there. And like I said, I expect the welcome to be even more so. Man, it was just, if you didn't see the game, of course, I don't know what the hell you were doing, but what an incredible beat down that Indiana put on the ninth-ranked Illinois Fighting Illini. And I had no doubt that they were going to win that game, but because like I said, I thought that they were better at every position, but that result, that end, no one could have predicted that. I certainly would not have ever claimed to. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, it keeps on rolling. The Rink Man joins us, Greg Rinkstraw from the ISC Sports Network, as we've got it all going here on this Monday with Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Greg Rakestraw joins us now from the ISC Sports Network. Greg, how was your weekend?
Weekend was fantastic. Had a good high school football game on Friday night. Colts won for a third consecutive time. And on the day in between, I threw an 11th birthday party for my son and a surprise 50th birthday party for my wife. So as weekends go, Jim, this was a pretty good one.
Yeah, great for the state of Indiana football. Purdue and Notre Dame playing, although that game went as expected. But I think Purdue gave a good showing in themselves. They continued to show that, hey, they are. This is not the Purdue team of the last few years. So that's going to be interesting as we get closer to the end of the season. But the Colts go to 3-0. Man, that, and not only did they go to 3-0, but it's how they got there that really looked impressive.
Correct. You know, you typically don't have 20-point wins in the National Football League. You know, everybody is within a touchdown of each other. And maybe the best example of that, you know, the Browns were 0-2 and looked far from good the first couple of weeks. So they were competitive with the Bengals. The Packers were 2-0, and they were talked about as one of the better teams in the National Football League. Browns beat them 13-10. So, you know, you could look at the fact the Colts are 3-0, but their opponents are 1-8. And say, all right, you know, you're going to play some better competition. And frankly, they will. You know, the Colts are going to the Rams next week, so we'll learn a little bit more about this football team a week from now. But the Colts have scored 103 points over the first three games. That obviously gets your attention. And the fact the Colts have won games by 21 and 25 points, that doesn't happen in the National Football League. So not just the fact that it's the first, you know, 3-0 start in 16 years, it's the way this offense has looked all 3 weeks that has Colts fans downright giddy on a rainy Monday morning.
I bet. They're also sitting first place in their division right now. I believe. Are they the only divisional game that's taken place?
No, so Texans and Jaguars played each other yesterday too. So, but the Colts schedule is quirky. They do not see the Texans nor the Jaguars until Thanksgiving. They don't see the Jaguars until December. They play them twice in December, play them December 7th and December the 28th. The first game is in Jacksonville. The 28th is the home finale against the Jaguars. And so, frankly, I think Colts fans were rooting a little bit for the Texans yesterday, because if the Texans had won in Jacksonville, the Colts would have been two games clear of everybody in the division. They're only a game ahead of the Jaguars, but you kind of knew going in that the Colts, you know, it was like, hey, be 500 or a little bit above going to Thanksgiving, because four of your last six are against divisional teams. You can then take care of business, at that point in time. Frankly, now I think the goal's a little bit loftier for this football team. And I saw this stat. I think since 2019, 86% of the teams that have started 3-0 have made the playoffs. That is music to Colts fans' ears, knowing it has been 5 years since their last playoff appearance. It has been 11 years since the last division championship. And that same stat rings true, 11 years since the last playoff game at Lucas Oil Stadium. Think about that, Jim. 11 years. They have not had a home playoff game. Colts fans can start thinking about these things now with a 3-0 start.
Not only that, they've scored, Daniel Jones in the offense has scored 103 points in these first three games.
Correct.
Now, I mentioned that, first of all, because that's a hell of a lot of points in the NFL. Normally 60 would be pretty good if you scored 20 points a game, but no Indianapolis era Colts team has ever done that.
Right.
Three Peyton Manning teams got to 100, but never eclipsed 101. So this is not your grandpa's Colts offense. Well, maybe your grandpa's. It's not your dad's Colts offense, I guess I'd say. They are rolling, and Shane Steichen, a former quarterback at UNLV himself, seems to have what he wants and what he needs offensively.
Correct. Maybe my favorite stat of all is that Rigoberto Sanchez is on pace to punt 5.7 times this year, that he's had one in the first three games of the season. But the stat that is most important for the Colts, they have committed zero turnovers in the first three games of the season. Zero. And that is a first time that has happened. Daniel Jones has been like manna from heaven. And yes, we are reminded of what the Colts looked like in 2023. Now, that team won 9 games and just missed the playoffs, but really exceeded expectations. And I bring that up, Jim, because, you know, the talk in 2023 was, what a head coach Shane Steichen is, what a play caller Shane Steichen is. The bloom kind of came off of that rose last year. Well, now it is back because the Colts have been so good offensively. Jones has been so good. Jonathan Taylor has been so good. Tyler Warren has been so good. The entirety of the wide receiver room has been so good. When it comes to being a play caller, I think Shane Steichen may be an elite company, and we have seen that so far the first three games of the season.
Without question. You mentioned Rigoberto Sanchez on pace to potentially punt five times this season. That would make him the highest punter probably in the history, paid punter in the history of the NFL. If you extrapolated that out to a per punt average paycheck, not bad, not bad.
The good news is that he is also the holder. So the Colts are at least getting a little bit more money out of him. But yes, if you lead the league in dollars paid per punt, you're probably in pretty good shape, which is exactly where the Indianapolis Colts are right now.
No doubt about that. High school football, I know that your schedule always includes a little high school action, and we're in, we just completed week five.
Crazy.
The prep circuit. Halfway, they're halfway done with their season now.
Correct. Half of the teams in the state are halfway done. If you're knocked out in the first round, you're going to play 10. So whether they know it or not, half the teams in the state are at the halfway point of their season. So North Central and Carmel is the game that I will have this week, which I'm not sure will be the best or most competitive game. North Central is better. They have won twice. They didn't win once any of the last 3 years. They snapped a 32-game losing streak to start the season. Carmel is one of the great stories in the state. And again, you can't call Carmel the underdog when you're the largest school in the state by a significant margin. But they won three games last year. They're 4-1 this year. Their lone loss was in Louisville to Trinity last week. They beat Columbus North 56-7. Again, the way that it sets up in 6A from a bracketing standpoint, Jim, you've got Crown Point that's in the northwest corner. You've got Carmel that's in the northeast corner. You've got Brownsburg that is kind of what would be the north side or Indianapolis, and Center Grove, which is kind of south of Indianapolis. Those teams don't see each other until the semi-state, and there is a chance that those schools do not have a loss to anybody from the state of Indiana when they would play each other. Now, I had Warren Central Friday night. They're improving quickly, and I think Warren might be the favorite next year in 6A because they got a sophomore quarterback, a junior tailback. Jeremy Finch is going to Alabama as a senior, but for example, Caleb Elkins had a visit to IU this weekend. He's a junior. Sean Fox had an offer from Minnesota. He is a 6'6", 220-pound linebacker. He is a junior. So Warren might be a year away, and Lawrence North has great talent like Monshin Sales, like Zay Moore. Like, their best players are sophomores and juniors. They would run into Brownsburg, Warren run into Center Grove. Those aren't exactly going to be easy games, but you can kind of see a clear path for like a top four teams in the state of Indiana in 6A, and they may all make it to the weekend before Thanksgiving.
It is just a fun time right now all the way around. The Colts doing unbelievably well, downright shocking some people, to be honest with you. Who the hell? Not only are they winning, they're winning convincingly. Right. Like I said, with this record, who in God's green earth thought that they would have broken every Peyton Manning first three game record?
Right.
As far as scoring, no one. But they've got what they need.
You know, I thought, Jim, that kind of how the opening part of the schedule laid out, they had a chance to be like 4-2, 5-1. I thought how the schedule in total played out. You know, I'd tell people, hey, I think this is a 10-win team because I liked all the moves that Chris Ballard made. Tyler Warren was an obvious draft pick because the Colts had this glaring need at tight end. I have lost track of total tight end catches for the season. I think the tight end room has about 45% of last year's catches already. Through three games with 14 more to play. I love the Ward pick. He was solid yesterday. We love the Bynum free agency selection. He had interceptions in each of the first two games. You just kind of felt the pieces were there. The multi-million dollar question was Daniel Jones the right guy? And was picking Daniel Jones over Anthony Richardson the right choice? Well, clearly, it is a resounding yes on both of those fronts. So again, Jim, it's why I said, hey, I thought the ultimate goal for this team, 10 wins, wild card team, just be a playoff team. When you've not been in the playoffs for 5 years, a successful season is being a playoff team. Now I think we're moving the goalposts because I think it's a really good football team. And again, much like that Denver game was a litmus test last week, the game in LA against the Rams is a very similar feel coming up this Sunday at 4 o'clock.
No doubt. What were you doing Saturday?
Nothing. Being a party planner. So my son's 11th birthday is today. And so happy birthday, Jack. But we had the family party planned for Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, my wife's 50th birthday is tomorrow. So unbeknownst to her, we threw her a surprise birthday party on Saturday night. And that went exceedingly well.
Yay. Now, did you happen to catch any of the Indiana game?
That was the key game that was on televisions. And of course, and I'm sure you get this too, when you're at a non-sports gathering, people know you as the sports guy. So every sports question gets asked to you. That also works for radio and television for me. Call people at like 7:45. Hey, can we get this switch to the IU game? Folks, it's on the same channel. Just wait. As soon as Purdue and Notre Dame is over with, they're holding the kickoff in Bloomington. We'll get you to IU and Illinois as soon as possible. But yes, while we are, you know, celebrating my wife, there's 20 people locked in going, oh my God, Indiana scored again. Oh dear God, Indiana scored again. Holy crap, look what Indiana's doing to Illinois. So yes, I was able to catch that and enjoy it like everybody else.
That had to be mind-boggling to you as well. I mean, it was
right.
To me. I mean, I expected a win, and I expected a double-digit win because going into it, I'm like, Indiana is just simply better at every position than Illinois is. I don't care what people are thinking this. I know what I know, but I didn't. I mean, geez, if I'd have known that, I would have bet everything I own in the world on that.
Well, let's face it, Jim. The common phrase was, hey, we think Indiana's really good. We don't know after the first three games. Now, again, the Old Dominion win kind of looks better by the week now for this football team. Clearly, what they did to Illinois is crazy. Now it isn't because you have the break after the Iowa game, and obviously you're gearing up for the mega matchup that Oregon could be. Now it's, all right, don't get fat and happy, which, again, I think Kurt Cignetti has the perfect disposition for his team to not do that. But now go take care of business in Iowa. Go take care of that first road test. Then you can stop and enjoy for a little bit, gearing up for a game that truly would be on the national radar. When you're the Saturday night NBC game, you're on the national radar. When you're playing at Oregon, and if you're undefeated, if you're doing so, now you're like the game of the week, your college game day level stuff, if that is the case. So it's just about, hey, being down the road. Now you just go, all right, let's go take care of business at Iowa and then enjoy this for a little bit before you gear up for maybe the likes of a game this program has never seen before, Jim, in the regular season.
There's no doubt. It's incredible. What is up on your docket for the remainder of the week?
All right, Friday night will be Carmel and North Central. Saturday night, Indy 11 playing host to FC Tulsa. And then on Sunday, Colts and Rams post-game show again. 4 o'clock kickoff. So for a lot of our affiliates, some of the same ones that carry this fine program will be on from about 7:15 to 9 o'clock and until 10 o'clock in Indianapolis, hopefully discussing a 4-0 start again for the first time in 16 years.
Well, you know, I grew up a Rams fan when I was a kid, I'm talking LA Rams, the original LA Rams.
Sure.
And for whatever reason, when they moved to St. Louis, I cut bait. I don't. There was just something about it. I'm like, no, I can't. I'm talking Vince Ferragamo and Jack Youngblood and back in the days, and I don't know what it was, but I dropped them, and then along came Peyton Manning, and I'm like, perfect timing. So, it should be fun this weekend. Looking forward to it. Make sure you're giving Greg a follow and keeping up with all the content at the ISC Sports Network because it will keep you enthralled.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Greg Rakestraw joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We've got plenty more coming up. Dustin DePerrick will join us, and we'll get talking more about this weekend's thrashing of Indiana over the Illini as they move into the number 11 spot in the AP poll. Should be in the top 10, but we'll talk about all that more on the other side when we return from these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday, post incredible sports weekend. Welcome in to the program. We'll talk to Dustin DePerrick when he is able to join us here shortly. But man, oh man, what an incredible college football weekend. I took a look at the college pick'ems. I'm stinking it up, man. After an incredible first weekend where I was just on fire, well, that has not that's not held sway for me. And I missed week two completely by forgetting to put the my picks in. But then after that, I've gone 5-5 consecutive weeks. Fortunately for my 10, 9, and 8 point picks, I won those, but I missed on Baylor, which was a huge upset. Baylor gets beat outright by Arizona State. Arizona State was only picked by 20% of the people. Then Arkansas had them picked. They lose to Memphis 32-31. Arkansas, the SEC, 86% had those people picked. I get Indiana over Illinois. I get UCF over North Carolina. Oh, boy, what a joke that is. What a, and it couldn't happen to a better group of people than the North Carolina Athletics that is losing basically $10 million that they're paying Bill Belichick this year alone. What else? The PR hit they've taken because of his crazy ass girlfriend on top of that. But yeah, they lose again. They're now 2-2 on the season. I picked North Carolina State over Duke after what we saw against Illinois. Well, damn, Duke beats North Carolina State handily, 45-33, and that was 78% of the people had NC State picked as well. Then I took Utah over Texas Tech. 70% of the people picked Utah. Texas Tech, 34-10. And then, of course, the last one was Michigan, Nebraska. That was just for 1 point because I didn't know which way that game was going to go. Michigan, big win for them, 30-27 on the road. So that was a pretty good weekend for Michigan there to get that win. That's an important win that they needed to get. And but in the rest of the Big Ten, let's see, check out how the rest of the weekend went, as a matter of fact, and we'll get our scores here. Ed pulled up, of course, that's the wrong week. Let's go to week four. And see, LSU now ranked number 3, 56-10 over Southeast Louisiana. Miami scolds Florida, as we expected. They are now number 2 in the country in the latest AP poll. Oregon only at number 6. They beat Oregon State 41-7. I'm telling you, I still think that Oregon is a lot better than 6th in the country. Dustin DePerrick from the Indy Star joining us now. Dustin, I'm just talking, going over some of the top 10 games that happened sure. over the weekend. And Florida State, I forget the coach's name. Might have to get comeback coach of the year or whatever, because man, oh man, you want to talk about dropping off the cliff, but then coming right back up 66-10, they beat Kent State. Mm-hmm. Texas is still the most overrated team in the country to me. They beat Sam Houston 55-0, and they're 3-1, but they do not belong in the top 10 to me. Indiana's number 11 mm-hmm. with, let me say this again, 63-10 over the 9th ranked Fighting Illini, who dropped, I think, 8 spots or however many they dropped. They dropped a bunch. Indiana climbing up to number 11. You've got Oklahoma that beat Auburn 24-17. Ole Miss with a huge win over Tulane. A lot of people thought that might be a great game. It wasn't. Texas Tech throttles Utah. Georgia Tech continues to win. Vanderbilt put up 70 points. Diego Pavia.
Whew. Yeah.
And I mentioned Michigan getting a huge win over Nebraska on the road. Matt Rhule, it buddy, it's this may be his final season because, sure. And he does not have all of these, but Nebraska is now something like 0-27 against ranked teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Indiana might be on that list twice.
Yeah.
And that if you're a Nebraska fan, that that stat alone, and then to have Indiana, that's kind of what started the when Scott Frost said something about why can't we play more teams like Indiana? That didn't go well back when I remember when that happened.
Sure, but, yeah. No, I mean, I think it, you know, he's not in great shape, but you know, certainly we'll see what goes on for the rest of that schedule. I mean, they are 3-1, you know, so I think they're not necessarily dead yet. They did give Michigan a game. It's not like they got, you know, went out and got crushed in that one. You know, they've been in worse shape recently and rules in year three. I mean, Frost, you know, Frost had a worse, had worse seasons there. I mean, his last were 3-5 in 2020. Like, I mean, Frost didn't have a winning season at Nebraska. So, I mean, Rules at least had a couple of those. You know, he was 7-6 last year, won a bowl game. You know, that probably gives him a little bit of, you know, of grace, I guess. And so I don't know if this team has to be a top 25 team for him to survive. But certainly, you know, you're going to want them to beat somebody, you know, that's actually worth noting. But I mean, you know, Nebraska's just, they've been in a hole ever, I mean, for a long time now. I mean, you just think back to, it's sort of just never recovered, to college football spreading out, you know, honestly. I mean, you really go back to, you know, really just since they've, those option teams, you know, of the Tom Osborne era and then the Frank Solich era, you know, they've just had a hard time ever grasping back onto it. It's just been difficult for them to find a foothold, you know, really just since that period. So it's been really, you know, I imagine he'll, you know, will still get a little bit more, you know, again, a little bit more grace because they, I think they have to realize they're not in good shape. You know, that it's tough for them for Nebraska to be what Nebraska was. And they have to judge, you know, success differently. So they're going to have to, you know, I mean, certainly he's going to have to go win the games he's supposed to win, you know, throughout the rest of the season. But, you know, I don't know that losing to Michigan as in as close a game as they lost is going to be a reason for panic there. But, you know, if some other bad things happen, you know, they could have a problem, and it's, you know, kind of double-edged sword for having a player like Dylan Raiola. You know, when a guy has that kind of talent, if you're not going to win games, you know, that, like, it's good that you got him. You know, it's good that you get a player like that on your team, but if you don't win, you know, that comes back to bite you.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to watch anything Saturday?
Yeah. I mean, you know, was bopping around being social a little bit, but I you know, watched the Indiana game casually and then made a point to watch, actually, you know, just get down and watch it last night just cause, so I could talk about it with some level of proficiency here. But yeah, no, who else did I watch? I caught the end of Miami and Florida, you know, Miami putting them away, had some games on during, you know, watched Notre Dame early. You know, they, you know, obviously struggled a little bit in the early going there, managed to put that thing away. Trying to think who else I watched on Saturday, you know, had a couple of the other games on, saw the end of the Memphis game. That was nuts. You know, for them to get, you know, this strip on Arkansas there late. You know, that was really an interesting game and a heck of a win for Memphis. I'm trying to think who else I had on the noon period. You know, obviously saw Syracuse, you know, get Clemson. You know, Clemson certainly in a bad way at 1-3. Yeah, it's, you know, it's shaping up to be an interesting season. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts coming up here, and you know, you're going to start to see some things get decided and shaken up real quick as you start, you know, heading into conference play. You know, with everybody really getting in the conference play in the next week or two.
Yeah, and as I look at I'm looking around at some NCAA stats. Here's one that'll jump out at you. Mm. 5 of the top 6 quarterbacks in throwing completion are from the Big Ten.
Wow.
Throwing. This is not your grandpa's Big Ten, baby. 5 of the top 6 throwing by percentage. And Julian Sain from Ohio State leads them at basically 79%. On 71 attempts. Fernando Mendoza is right there at second on 99 attempts. Dylan Raiola, who has thrown 135 pass attempts, substantially the most of of any of these guys, but he is at, we're already lost at 75%. Dante Moore of Oregon, 95 attempts, 75%. Diego Pavia is the lone exception there as he jumps in front of Damond Williams Jr. from Washington. So, wow. This is going to be an electric league, I think. I think that while the SEC is still getting a lot of attention, there's teams like Texas that I think are just substantially overrated. That it's still about Arch Manning, and Arch Manning is shown to be a better than average quarterback, maybe. They're not doing anything that other than wearing Texas on their jerseys to deserve what the attention they're getting, but it is what it is. Yeah, these numbers say otherwise, which is kind of wild to see. But yeah, Carson Beck from Miami, number 9.
Beck's been excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's to me, I love Carson Beck as a quarterback. I keep saying he's got what I call dead eyes. When you see him, they close up on him, he has zero emotion in his face. I mean, he looks just like he is, whatever. And gosh, his heart rate must be nothing. And you love that in a decision maker.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, you're still in week 4 and things are going to shake out. I mean, there's kind of a formula. I mean, I certainly have talked about voting in the AP pool before. I mean, I think that one of the biggest things that you're trying to do is not get in trouble. That's not your main job. You know, basically, if you're an AP poll voter, you have a job, and that is the reason that you got to vote, and you have to focus on that on Saturdays. And basically, you don't get to watch as many games as other people who are just watching it casually. You come out of it and you're like, okay, you stick to a formula. Like, how far down can you put somebody for this? And basically what you're writing off of is Texas was number 1. And, you know, for a lot of people going into the season, and they lost to Ohio State. And so you're like, okay, well, how much can you take a team down for losing to the number 1 team? You know? And so it's like, okay, well, you can't take them out, you know, of the top 10 entirely yet. You know, like you want to give them a chance to, you know, lose it with some other games. So they're going to have the opportunity to blow it. I mean, they've got Florida next week, or I don't know if it's next week. They got Florida coming up. They've got, Oklahoma, you know, still on schedule. They've got Vanderbilt. They've got Georgia. They got Texas A&M. If they run the table, they're going to be a top 10 team. If they don't, they won't. You know, and so you kind of trust, I think, as a voter that the results are going to shake out the way they shake out. I mean, you can give a team a little bit of, you know, more grace than they deserve at this stage, so as not to be like sort of, I guess, overly punitive. And so that's certainly what was keeping Texas in it. It's like, if you thought they were the number 1 team in the country and all that's happened is they've lost to Ohio State, you know, do you think they're not a top 10 team anymore? I mean, they might not be, you know, certainly like, they played that game and they haven't played anybody worth noting since. And you don't want to do stuff like, oh, they didn't look great in a win over UTEP, and you're going to ding them up over that. Like, that doesn't seem to be a reason to take somebody down. So, I mean, like, there are going to be the opportunities. If you don't think Texas is a top 10 team, you know, you're going to find out October 11th, you know, like, I mean, if they beat Oklahoma, then you're like, okay, well, fine. You know, they deserve to be there. If they don't and they tumble, you know, you might, if they get beat bad by Oklahoma, you might take them out of your top 20, if it's bad enough. So, you know, we'll see on that stuff. Like, I get like, does Texas have the least justification in terms of what they've done so far, to be in the top 10? Sure. But also, you know, Penn State and Oregon haven't played anybody either. And so, you know, they play each other. So it's like, you know, this eventuality and in the early going, it's just such a small sample size to be able to judge based on what's happening. You just sort of have to wait and trust that it's going to shake out and make sense, by mid-October.
No doubt. And that game Saturday night for Indiana on national television, on an NBC audience.
Yeah.
Top 10 matchup. And man, they started off just right off the bat, blocking the punt, D'Angelo Pons, and the scoop and the score. They had one defensive lapse that allowed a touchdown. And I'm sure that drove Cignetti crazy because had it not been for that, maybe they get a field goal on that. Maybe they don't. But otherwise, that could have been a just allowing 3 points in that game. And that would have been even just wilder. But, man, Luke Altmaier had no time to breathe. And I was unbelievably impressed by what Indiana's defensive line did, because that was the biggest question for me on this entire team. And I'm like, wow. And that was against an Illinois team whose offensive line has the most starts in all of college football.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that was amazing. That certainly the offensive line is what you've heard everything about. I thought I was really impressed by, you know, the confidence. I think Sinetti said, like, I thought our D-line was going to whoop their O-line, and I was right. I mean, I can't remember that's what his exact syntax was. But, yeah, I mean, you look at this drive chart, and it's crazy. I mean, that you know, big play is a three-play 75-yard drive. There are two drives outside of that go for more than 17 yards. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, everything else is punt. And even the, you know, like, you got an 8-play 47-yard drive in the second quarter that gets, you know, eventually gets stopped for a field goal. And then the next longest drive is 5 for 23, and you have an interception in the fourth quarter when that game is obviously long since over. I mean, you've got, you know, how many three and outs? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 three and outs in this game. I mean, just really remarkable stuff. And like you said, I mean, they just flat out owned it, the line of scrimmage. It was just absolutely dominant. I mean, and not only that, I mean, it was on both sides of the ball. I mean, like, they were able to just swarm Luke Altmaier at all points. I mean, couldn't run the ball at all. Illinois couldn't run the ball at all. And on the flip side of that, I mean, Mendoza had time. You know, I mean, I think he was excellent, but I mean, like, it just, the total offensive operation just made everything easy. You know, I mean, like, it just seemed like he had time to sit back, find open guys. There were open guys, you know, like, there were some good throws, but like, you don't have one that you're like, wow, that was an absurdly, you know, absurd needle threading, because there was just always something there. You know, and that's not to certainly knock down anything what Mendoza did. He was sharp, but it was just like, that's how good the operation was that everything, there was enough time, there was enough space to make, you know, easy decisions and kind of pick them apart. I mean, receivers were terrific. Offensive line was terrific. Just both sides of the ball. Like, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, it was a darn near perfect performance. Just incredible stuff on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, it was. And as I looked at the percentage, or the quarterback passing completion percentage, the Big Ten has 5 of the top 6, as I mentioned, and that's crazy. But also, what's even wilder, two former IU quarterbacks also in the top 24.
That's wild.
With Brendan Sorsby at number 23, Taven Jackson right behind him at 24.
Central Florida, yeah.
So, and Central Florida, I wonder how Bill Belichick enjoyed that. Man.
Been a start, been a day.
$10 million that man's getting.
Yep. It's a different game, man. It is a different game. And it's really crazy. I mean, like, certainly there's everything else surrounding Belichick that, you know, like, I am not versed enough in to discuss the whole Jordan Hudson thing. I haven't been paying attention to, but you know, the, yeah, like, it's, you know, 48-14 to TCU, 34-9 to Central Florida. I mean, you got a couple easy ones in the middle there in Charlotte and Richmond, but, man, you know, like, just they just don't seem to be there. And it's just you know, like, I haven't, you know, this is a different sport right now. I mean, like, what has made great coaches before in the past, it's different now in terms of how you amass a roster, how you put it together. It's a totally different skill set than we've seen throughout time. And it's also a different skill set than you see in the NFL. I mean, like, it you know, college sports really are harder right now to roster build than professional sports by a long shot. And it's not close, you know, like, anybody who ever thought, oh, free agency and trades and these guys want this and these guys want that. It's, I mean, like, professional sports is dramatically easier to put a roster together and keep it together now because you have multi-year contracts, you know, and, you know, because you have, you know, you have draft, you know, rookie scale contracts in different leagues that give you some level of team control. You know, these guys don't know what they're going to have, and it's difficult to recruit. I mean, like, you don't know what you have. I mean, you really don't until it shows up on Saturday, you know, in terms of like what your team is going to look like. And, you know, some guys are phenomenal at this. Kurt Cignetti is phenomenal at this, you know, and there are some guys that are great at taking, they can get 85 new scholarships and not, you know, blink an eye, and some guys cannot. And so like Belichick is used to continuity. Belichick is used to having the same quarterback run out there for 15 years or however many years he had Tom Brady, and, you know, being able to like have a rock that you depend on. And this is a different game. And so, you know, it is crazy to see. I'm like, you know, like I grew up rooting for the Steelers, man. I've seen Belichick teams just rip their hearts out. So, you know, like I'm not going to say like, I mean, he's the best NFL coach of the last, you know, 40 years. I mean, he's incredible. And so the fact that this is absolutely flummoxing him so far is wild. It's amazing. It is crazy that this is the case.
Yeah. And, to see, I mentioned with Fernando being number two in passing percentage, but he's number one in touchdowns, and Julian Sawyer, who is number one in passing completed percentage for Ohio State, he's number 32 in touchdowns. So it probably seems like there's a lot of short passing going on for Ohio State, while Indiana and Fernando throwing all over the place, man.
Sure.
And Kurt Cignetti talked about his growth, and I think his growth was never more on display than one of the first plays of the second half. He drops back for a pass and goes through his progressions, and there's just nothing there. And he takes off to run, but he never took his eyes off of downfield. And he found Elijah Surratt over on the sideline, kind of moving, waiting, you know, keeping it alive. And whoop, he throws a sidearm pass that resulted in a first down. That is growth by a guy who used to like to, who used to have happy feet. So that is what the development has been, and that's one of the reasons he came. I heard him say that, man, he was amazed at the growth in the mental abilities from a quarterback standpoint of his brother after being at IU, and he goes, I better get there before he gets ahead of me.
No, it's really impressive stuff, you know, that how how quick he's picking stuff up, how much he's just growing from week to week. Again, helpful that the whole operation is there, you know, helpful that, you know, like that there's an open receiver to find eventually. I mean, Surratt, I mean, Cooper was spectacular, you know, Cooper's been unbelievable, and Surratt was excellent. And EJ Williams did some great things, you know, it's just like, but yeah, like you're seeing great growth. He's doing a great job of reading possessions, of finding the guy, of getting the ball, you know, on time and on target, you know, being able to throw on the move. You know, there's not anything he's not doing right, you know, at this point. But it's also like there's like it helps that the right answer's on the test, you know, like you look at it and it's not like, you know, everything's a bad choice. Like it's almost like on every play there's a good option, you know, on every play there's an opportunity. And it's just because everything's being blocked that well. Skill position guys are playing fantastic. You know, you're getting ahead of the change. They're running the ball well. Just, you know, I mean, everything about this operation, certainly on Saturday was just flawless. I mean, there just was not a lot of, you know, a lot of plays when you're like, well, there's nothing he can do. You know, like there's most plays you're like, oh, there's an answer, and he's got it, and he figured it out, and they're moving the chains again.
It was, I will have to say, the execution was pretty mesmerizing from by watching Indiana and what they were able to do. The game plan on both sides of the ball was perfect. It seemed like every call they made offensively was the right call at the right time. That screenplay that went to the tight end Nowakowski. Oh my God. And watching each player, whether it was Kalon Black or whomever, they are running at 110% of the capacity of their abilities. Everything that they're doing, it's not 90%, it's not 80%, it's not 95%. They're doing everything at a 100% clip, which that comes from the coaching down. You have to instill that. And man, that's the difference. And I keep hearing a lot of people talk about the coaching in Indiana and how well prepared they are. And if you listen to Kurt Cignetti, you're going to hear him say a lot of phrases, and you're going to hear him say them a lot. But it's because that is really how they approach everything, and it's how you have to live it, no matter what it is. And he has done an incredible job getting the buy-in from these players, and a game like that just sells it all the more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one kind of example of what you're talking about that was big in the moment, you know, is what was it? Was it the 4th-and-1? I think they had Omar Cooper in motion. And you know, basically, and they've got him sort of stopping in motion behind the basically in the tackle box, and they have him turn and operate as a lead blocker, and you know, he kind of picks up that space. I mean, like, you know, again, like, your wide receiver operating as a lead blocker between the tackles is not the thing that you see all the time, you know. Like, I mean, like, you know they'll downfield block, stuff like that. I'm not saying that, you know, guys wouldn't do it. Okay, I'm gonna push back on any Bob Asmussen slander. Bob's my guy, man. Bob's been through some stuff.
I don't know Bob.
Bob's been through some stuff, man. Bob's a good dude. I mean, I don't know if he's wrong about whatever. Bob's a good dude. You know, that's all I'll say. I didn't read that whole comment, but I'm gonna stand up.
Just basically says, if you want to know why the AP poll is meaningless, look at Bob Asmussen of the Champaign News Gazette. He has been crapping on IU football for a year and a half with his vote while propping up Illini. Well, first of all, I will say, when you're on a particular beat, it's not an allegiance, because everybody tries to be neutral, but you think that you see things that other people don't see because you're there more often. I only knew of Illinois what I saw from television. And I knew I was pretty confident Indiana was going to win that game. But so that's natural that you're going to because that's what he saw. I mean, he saw Illinois succeeding up until this point. They have just succeeded. And everybody, it wasn't just him. Hell, they were ranked number 9. They didn't get ranked number 9 by one guy. Right. So that means other people were even ranking them higher.
Sure.
But you saw what they dropped, and that is now appropriate. It would be interesting to see what his vote for Illinois is now after game, and I'll look that up. But that's an explain for that. I mean, I get that. Dustin DePierre that's with us, but Dylan Sin, he's an AP voter, and he tends to have Indiana a little bit higher, but it's usually correct because he is actually seeing, like, if I was an AP voter, I would have voted him 10th. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to wind up 12th in this poll, but I would have voted him 10th. You can't take away from the other teams yet. It's still early, but I get it. You're not going to make fans of other teams happy. That's not your job anyway.
Yeah. I mean, again, this isn't your job. If you're an AP poll voter, the AP poll is not your job. It's this, I mean, but you have to take it seriously because it's an honor, you know, like basically the way it works is, you know, basically like the AP, the sort of main Associated Press sports writer in your state is basically taxed with, you know, like every state gets a certain amount of votes and it's different based on, I don't know, it's population or number of schools that are, you know, that programs that are in there. And, you know, like they have to pick guys. And if someone, you know, falls off of it, they've got to replace them, all that kind of stuff. Like they're kind of tasked with it, the person that individual state. So like Mike Merritt is the guy in, you know, Indy, and, you know, obviously love Mike Merritt to death. And so, you know, like Mike's asked me to do it for basketball a couple years, football a couple years. And so like, basically, you know, like you kind of, you do it because it's like, hey, like they must think you're credible enough to give it a shot, you know. And but the reason why I saw an interesting discussion between Andy Staples and Ari Wasserman on Three. They did their podcast. Obviously, those guys are, you know, I worked with them at The Athletic. And they, you know, basically the thing Andy said, because they talked to Ralph Russo, who's now at The Athletic, and Ralph used to run when he was at the AP, he was the main college football writer at the AP. He ran the AP Top 25. That was part of his job, is he had to mass everybody, and you emailed your poll to Ralph. And also the thing with Ralph was really good at was like Ralph would catch, like if you had something that didn't make any sense, like if somebody got beat and you didn't move him down, like he'd be like, hey, did you mean to do that? You know, like just make sure that you didn't just miss it, you know, because you have a job. And usually they catch that. And so like, I wonder if that's kind of what happened with the woman who didn't move Florida down below South Florida last time, you know, like they got a new operation. So, but anyway, point of the matter, you know, they said they talked to Ralph and Ralph said the big reason why the AP still exists, the AP poll still exists is it's a living historical document. You know, and like this is one of the things that sort of like is a thing that you can go back to throughout time. It goes back to 1936. I mean, that's how they used to choose national champions before you had a playoff, before you had the BCS. I mean, that's sort of what the thing was. So I'm like, you can like there are, you know, like there are kind of historical things that you can connect to the AP and say, okay, well, this is the number of times they've beat AP ranked top 25 teams. And you can do that, you know, going back 90, you know, almost 90 years. And so it's sort of like to be able to maintain that, but it's also like you have to maintain the same methodology, and the methodology is spreading it out. You know, basically is that kind of understand there's going to be bias, and there used to be more bias because when you go back to 1936, not everybody had a TV, you know, like you were basing it on what you were seeing. So you're sort of trusting everybody, you were trusting everybody to be biased to what they were seeing live and hearing on the radio or whatever, because they didn't have, you know, like all these sort of advanced next level stats that they weren't able to watch, get 10 games on their laptop, you know, like so it's been that way for all this, and you're kind of maintaining this historical document. And it's easier now that that doesn't determine who plays in the national championship game or who wins the national championship. I mean, I guess it determines who does, but you're going to play the team that, you know, pick the team that won the playoff. Nobody's picking anybody different now at this point when you've got a 12-team playoff. So, you know, ultimately, it shakes out so that it's not that far off by the time it's done. At this point, it's going to be, you know, jangled. And yeah, like that is, I think there is a bias in, you know, that's sort of natural in the team you cover because you see them in camp, you know, like, or at least enough, you see at least some practice. You remember these guys and how they've grown and everything. And that's the team you cover every Saturday. That's the team you look at. And so when you think you're covering a really good team, you're probably going to rank them a little bit higher. And then that changes really, really fast when you see them get beat. So it's going to be that way. I'm sure Asmussen moved them down, you know, so. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be some bias there. If you look at anybody's individual pool, you're going to find somebody to yell at. And, you know, I mean, that's part of that is actually part of the fun of it is, you know, like they have all your stuff on pool tracker. I mean, like you remember this when I had a pool a couple years ago, Kansas State just came after me for no reason. And it was hilarious. They're funny as all get out, you know, and told me I think one person told me that like, because I didn't rate Kansas State, they took it out on their son, Dustin. So it's his fault that he's grounded. It's my fault that he's grounded and can't, you know, look at his cell phone for a week. It was, you know, it was funny stuff, you know, but you know, sometimes people are nasty about it or whatever, but you know, especially at this time of year, man, I mean, this stuff, you know, like, I mean, I guess it matters for narrative, but at the end of the day, the people that are picking college football, you know, playoff teams aren't going to be that concerned about what the AP said in September. You know, like they might give some credence to people who didn't deserve to be ranked at the time, but they also, you know, have their own brains. And if someone was ranked, you know, in September and they're not now, not in November because somebody got hurt, you know, they remember these things. You know, they're not total idiots over there. So, you know, like it's cool. It makes sense to maintain it as a living document and to document this stuff going forward. But I mean, I think it's better for everybody that it doesn't determine, you know, who gets in the playoff.
Yeah. As I look through it, I can see who voted what way. And first of all, Bob Asmussen moved Indiana, his vote. He voted him 10th this week. And he dropped Illinois all the way to 21st. So I think that was very kind of dead on. As I look through,
yeah, but go ahead.
Others, Bob Ballou from CBS Austin has Indiana 16th. Now that I'm gonna have to look at a guy and go, what are you looking at, dude?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Again, like, nothing.
He's got Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt and Ole Miss ranked ahead of Indiana, which I think is ridiculous. But
who knows?
Yeah. And a friend of mine that I know, Keith Farmer from Lexington, has Indiana 15th, and I'm getting ready to send him a text. I'm like, hey, you want to come on and explain this? There are people that have Andy Yamashita from the Seattle Times as Indiana 8th, as well as Dylan Sin, appropriately. I think that's right about there. Garland Galen from WVUE-TV Fox 8. I don't know where that is. Greg Medea, the Daily Progress. Don't know where that is either.
That's Charlottesville. Greg Medea is a Greg is a fellow Daily News Record alum. So salute Greg Medea.
Johnny McGonigal from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette has Indiana 8th as well. And I think that's all of the – no, there are Randy Johnson. He is retired from pitching and now moved to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He's got him at 8th, as does Sean Ryder from Albuquerque and Sean Goodwin from Idaho. Oh, Stephen Means from the from Cleveland.com has IU ranked 5th in the country. So that's the highest. So yeah, they're ranked anywhere from 5th to 16th. That might be the biggest spread. I'd have to go through, of course, and look at this, but that's a pretty damn
pretty
big
wild
spread.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, you see, I'm trying to think, you know, you see that from time to time. You know, you see people look at teams a lot differently. You know, I know Stephen Means takes it seriously. Steve is Nathan Baird, who works for us, used to work with Stephen at Cleveland.com when he was covering Ohio State. And yeah, I mean, like I'm not surprised that someone who covers the Big Ten was like, hey, that's the most impressive win anybody's had in the Big Ten yet, you know.
Here's a stat for you. Mm-hmm. That 63 points is the most points against a top 10 team in the history of the Big Ten Conference.
That's wild. I'm not surprised.
The entire history of the Big Ten Conference. That is the biggest win ever. Now,
you've seen some other.
Illinois was overrated. I'm going to be the first to say that. I did not see them as a top 10 team. A lot of that was based on last year's success with 10 wins and the fact that they had most of that back. Right. But it is what it is. Hey, we've got to take a break. We've chatted and chatted. Yep. It's been great. Dustin DePerrick, the Indy Star, Pacers beat writer with us. And Pacers are getting closer, baby. It's not that far away. Media day's close. It's we're
probably 1 week, man. 1 week.
It's nuts.
I'm losing my freedom very quickly.
There you go. Hey, more coming up from Indiana Sports Beat Radio after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Dustin DePerrick and the Pacers, man. It's almost time to run it back.
Yep. 1 week from today is media day. We get we'll get to talk to the front office guys later this week. Saw last week they met down in Orlando in at Pascal Siakam's gym. Again, you make $45 million a year, you can buy your own gym. Really cool thing Siakam does. I mean, he's kind of got his own sort of media side project. He's got a guy who follows him around and films like everything. And it's, you know, so they put out all kinds of highlights on Twitter and everything like that. So you got to see what it looks like when these guys actually playing together. Not a lot of officiating, but guys just kind of calling their own fouls and stuff. So some cool stuff. I think you saw the, kind of grit that they're approaching this with. I mean, I do think they have taken it really personally that a lot of people are using the phrase gap year for this group with Tyrese Halliburton out. I don't think they view it that way. I know they don't view it that way. I know they're going to come in sort of motivated and angered by the idea that everybody's written them off and said, okay, well, you're out your best player. You're not going to be any good. Now it's still tough. I mean, basically like it's, you know, most of your great teams in the NBA have two all-star caliber players. And when you only have one, it makes it really difficult to compete, you know, over the course of a season. It doesn't necessarily make it tough to compete over the course of an evening and give somebody a game and fight and whatnot. But, you know, it's tough to get the number of W's that you need when everybody else has that kind of firepower. And so I think that's certainly going to be the difficult piece of it for the Pacers going forward. But I think you look at this, I mean, you know, just from watching the way they go at each other, they look game, I guess is the best way to put it. This is just, you know, carefully clipped highlights from, you know, Pascal Siakam's guy and Pascal himself in terms of showing you what's going on in these things. But I mean, you could just tell that this team, you know, these guys are way too competitive to, you know, like say, all right, let's get a draft pick and get better for next year when Ty comes back. You know, this these guys are going to get after it. And so it's going to be, you know, like I think this team's going to fight hard.
Yeah, it's it has to be tough going into the season. First of all, coming off of the success you had, and I'm not going to say knowing that's not going to be there, because that's not a thought that professionals try to have in their head. They're thinking, how can we duplicate or replicate that with the issues that we're going to have to deal with? Opportunity. Some guys have to view it as, hey, I'm getting an opportunity here. I've got to step up, or we all have to step up. It's a completely different mentality now coming into this season for these guys, knowing that what they have lost.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, obviously in each individual setting, I mean, the guys that are getting opportunities have had opportunities. You know, I mean, Andrew Nembhard's been a starter. He, you know, at shooting guard, as sort of a, you know, he's operated as kind of a secondary, you know, ball handler in the first place, because because the amount of attention Halliburton's had, you know, they've tried to move him off the ball. So he's running around and finding other ways to get in space instead of just getting double teamed when he brings the ball across the timeline. You know, they had to do stuff creatively to put Nembhard in a trigger man role. So he's not going to do anything that he's not used to doing. Frankly, you know, obviously he's been guarding, you know, he's turned into one of the best on ball defenders in the NBA. And so, you know, Nembhard having a big role is not going to be, you know, out of left field here. Ben Mathurin is going to be the guy who steps up to start at shooting guard with Nembhard shifting over to point. He's used to all this stuff. You know, he's used to playing a lot of minutes. I mean, like he's going to start more. He walks in with a more steady role than he's had. You know, it's not a situation where, okay, you're the starter, but you could lose this. You know, like, I mean, there's nobody behind him that I could reasonably see taking the job from him. You know, like, and that they're going to need his scoring and whatnot. I mean, like it's a big year for him. You know, because it's his walk year too. I mean, you know, he doesn't have an extension as of this point. You know, certainly they could sign it, you know, during the year at some point, but you know, like he doesn't have an extension right now. So I mean, he's making a play for free agency, you know, and basically he's going to be trying to put numbers up. So there's going to be some motivation there. You know, and a lot of other guys have had big roles off the bench already. Your Ben Shepherds, your Jairus Walkers, that it's going to be a little more steady. So yeah, I mean, there's opportunity there for a lot of guys. I mean, the center position obviously is wide open with Miles Turner gone. You're really having four guys fight for that. And that's the one spot where things are a lot different. Because you got two guys that are coming off Achilles tendon tears, they're going to be part of it, and Isaiah Jackson and James Wiseman. You had Jay Huff, who, you know, last year was a, you know, rotation player at Memphis for the first time in his career. He'd just really been a two-way contract guy up until then. And so he's getting a bigger opportunity than he's ever had. You still have Tony Bradley around in that mix. So that's truly wide open at the five. But everywhere else, it's a lot of guys being asked to do a little bit more. But most of the guys that have already been asked to do a lot, and that they're not necessarily going to come into this and be shell shocked in any way. But everyone's just gonna have to do a little bit more. You know, Siakam, I think, is going to have to operate as a captain. He's going to have to operate as a guy. He is going to be the central focus again. Now, he had that in Toronto. I mean, that's not going to be new. But it is going to be different that he's not going to have, you know, Halliburton taking attention off of him. If you're playing the Pacers, the first thing you're thinking of is, all right, how do I get the ball out of Pascal Siakam's hands? You know, how do I not let that guy, you know, get my guy in isolation on the wing and hit that turnaround bank shot jumper like he does all the time? You know, it's like, okay, get the ball away from him, make somebody else beat me. And so that's going to change just what he's been dealing with the last couple of years in Indiana.
Yeah, and fans, it's going to be hard for fans as when you have that success and that type of season, man, you just really want to follow that up. And it's going to be so difficult Gainbridge was just rocking every night. Sure. And not that it won't be, because I think that's one thing that they'll have is the fans following through with that same support, which is probably going to help them win some games, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, they know what they're in for. But they also, I mean, like, they're, you know, remember, they're not far removed from this being bad. You know, I mean, they were, they're, you know, like, they're looking for their third straight playoff run. It's not like they've been doing this for 10 years. They had a little bit of space in there. Certainly the Pacers have always generally been competitive. You had very rare dip outs where they haven't been a playoff caliber team, really since the 80s, basically. I mean, they've managed to kind of maintain some, standard of at least getting in the tournament, even if you get rocked once you get there. They usually tend to get there, but they had a dip there. They had a full rebuild, and so they love these guys, and it's the same group of guys that are there. They're just missing their best player, and so I think if this team is competitive every night, if it even gets in the play-in round, I mean, you're going to see a lot of good backing. I mean, they're not going to be if this team finishes eighth in the East and manages to slide in, get that, wins in the play-in round and gets in, even if it gets beat, 4-0 by Cleveland in the first round or 4-0 by the Knicks in the first round or something like that. I think people will be happy if they just sort of keep it moving. I think that's the biggest thing they have to do. It's just you need to maintain enough of the winning ways to, just kind of keep those muscles going. Even if this group doesn't win anything really big, even if it just gets in the playoffs and is competitive all year, and then you run it back again next year, and you're going to have Halliburton back, and maybe you make some other changes to the roster, pick up some guys, lose some guys, you'll be able to kind of see yourself as a championship contender again. If this group maintains a level of competitiveness and is postseason capable, even missing its best guy, you're going to see it really be further endeared to this fan base, I think.
Exactly. So what comes up next for you? Obviously media day very soon. What will that entail?
Yeah, we'll get, everybody to talk to on Monday. I mean, I don't know what players we'll get, but most of the main guys, they'll be running through because that's when they shoot all of their promotional stuff and that kind of thing. And it's Thursday. We talk to the front office. So we'll get like Chad Buchanan and Ted Wu off the record. We'll get to talk to some other folks off the record, get a sense of how they view this season. If there's moves they want to make, you just get a better chance of how they view this team and what they want it to be. So it'd be interesting. Quick thing, since the Reds were mentioned, also Indiana Fever, man.
Oh, hey.
1-0 on the Aces. That's a big deal.
That they're in this series is a big deal. How they won the first series. On the road, two games on the road, mind you, with six players out, two or three starters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, just how many they've lost over the course of the year, Caitlin Clark, Sophie Cunningham, Chloe Bibby, Ari McDonald. I mean, you've lost people that were replacements. they brought in Ari McDonald, who I thought was fantastic. That's just such a cool story. She was so good. That was the girl at Arizona who just busted up Indiana a couple of years back in the Elite Eight. You remember how good she was. And she had a hard time catching on. That's how hard it is to catch on in a 12-team, just a 13-team league now. She just did some excellent work filling in for Caitlin Clark, and then she gets hurt, so they've lost replacements, for people that were, replacing people. So, Kelsey Mitchell has been an absolute phenomenon. Certainly she's been carrying the franchise for years, prior to Caitlin, prior to Aaliyah Boston, there was Kelsey Mitchell, and she is, she's playing at MVP caliber. I mean, Audra Wilson, I understand why she won the award because her numbers are absurd. But Kelsey Mitchell has been probably the player that you could say, man, if you don't have that player, where are they going? Aaliyah Boston's really grown up. But you saw, we went to the game a couple nights ago just as fans. I think we went to game two of the Dream Series. I mean, like Ariel Powers off the bench, bringing a bunch of spark. Odyssey Sims been terrific as somebody who eventually had to take over that point guard job. Lexi Hollis hit some massive shots. Natasha Howard, such a really good two-way player. A lot of good pieces coming together for that group, just showing a lot of guts. Following some, I think some of the, a template that the Pacers laid. I mean, they're just outrunning you right now and outgritting you, and I think they're wearing the Aces out. That's a big deal. The fact that I think Becky Hammon was talking about not being able to keep up the pace, it sounds a lot like Kenny Atkinson after game one in the Cleveland Pacers series, where like, man, you can't coach that, you can't you can't practice that to give you your team a real opportunity for how fast they run. And so, like, hearing the same thing about the Fever that you hear about the Pacers makes you think, whoa, I mean, there sort of might be some potential in this series. So them to win in Vegas in game one is a big deal. So that's big. And big week in baseball, since somebody mentioned it, man. You know, down to it, you know, like last week of the regular season, Cincinnati's
how about the Reds, the man?
How about that, man?
Yeah. They have won the games against the Cubs that they needed to win. The Mets give them a little help. And just when I thought that they were out, when you're down two games with eight games to play, baseball usually doesn't have this kind of excitement because it's such a slow moving sport, but
it's a long year. Man, somebody usually there's some separation, but this last week brought, I mean, like, you got, like, the bottom fell out for Detroit. And all of a sudden, they got a one-game lead going into a three-game set against Cleveland, and they could lose that. I mean, Detroit's been the best team in the American League most of the year, and they might be out of the playoffs by the end of the week. Like, that's nuts. You know, Cincinnati, the Mets, the Diamondbacks are right there. The Giants aren't far off. You know, like, a lot can happen in the National League wildcard race. You look at the American League, you know, I mean, like, Houston's on the outside looking in right now. You know, and a couple weeks ago, they've had, you know, it's kind of space over Seattle. And first they got swept by the Mariners over the weekend. You know, so there, I think three back of Seattle in the West. I mean, they're still, I think, a game back of Cleveland now. You know, I think the only team that's clinched a playoff spot, in the American League is Toronto. I think that's it. And they only got a two or three game lead on the Yankees in the East. I mean, that the whole American League's a mess, you know, like LA still hasn't, you know, put San Diego down yet, in the National League West. I mean, Philly and Milwaukee are safe, and that the Chicago's in, but that's it. So, I mean, basically it's going to be a wild week of baseball. It's going to be a wild week in the WNBA, and football's still nuts, and NBA's coming, and like everything, you know, late September, beginning of October, everything's going wild here. So it's going to be fun, a bunch of stuff.
It's all about to lock in, baby. It's going to be fun. Dustin DePierrick, make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all of his great content regarding the Pacers at the Indy Star. And he's just he's the man. He's our guru. Appreciate you, my friend.
Appreciate you, Jim. See you.
Lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We'll wrap up this weekend and look ahead as the Indiana Hoosiers, now ranked 11th in the AP poll. I think they should be 10th, but we'll talk about that poll and some votes when we come back, and plenty more here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday after an incredible football weekend. Shout out to the fans that were in attendance at the game for Indiana, because they brought it, man. I only wish that instead of sitting in the press box, I could have been in a place to hear all of that, because I could hear just a little bit. It's a closed off tomb as far as sound. When they play the national anthem, we're all standing, but we can't hear Jack. I mean, zero. It's weird. It's just silence in the press box without being able to even hear the national anthem. But Indiana fans sure made themselves known. They filled Memorial Stadium, and I can't even imagine how many thousands of people probably were outside that didn't even get to go in because they didn't have a ticket, and probably could have had there been an opportunity. But what an incredible night. Indiana puts on a show for the ages. And you know, earlier I talked about some stats. Fernando Mendoza, the junior quarterback from Indiana, in four games, leads the nation in touchdown passes. He is alone at 14. 10 coming in the last two games. Sawyer Robertson is second with 13. Joey Aguiar with Tennessee, they're at 12th. Kansas, Jalen Daniels has 12. Arkansas's Taylen Green, they took a loss this weekend. Josh Hoover, there's another former IU quarterback, actually. It's incredible to see these former IU quarterbacks, but he's not really a former IU quarterback. He was a commit that decommitted and has been the starter at TCU. But him Brendan Sorsby, David Jackson, all up on these national charts. It's amazing to see that. And kind of wild, to be honest with you. Luke Altmaier, he's down at 15 with 9. He got 0 this past weekend. And it's going to be interesting to see how Illinois responds. They've got USC coming in, and USC has one of the top offenses in the country as well. So I think Illinois loses that game just because they're not as good as people think. Just because their offensive line has the most starts in all of college football, hadn't served them that well. Man, it's been a great show. Cannot thank everybody enough. Look forward to coming back tomorrow and doing it all again, because we've got plenty more to talk about, and we'll do it. Appreciate you guys for joining us. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.